Broadcasting and streaming worldwide from the Golf Club Studios, it's the Golf Club Radio Show with Danielle Tucker.
Hi, Danielle. It's Ben Crenshaw.
Oh, Ben Crenshaw, so good to hear your voice every Saturday morning, and welcome into the clubhouse. We've got a great show lined up for you. Gary Williams is going to be on the show, the host and executive producer of Five Clubs on Golf Channel, Sirius XM, and John Hagen. What's going on at Pebble Beach? That's an interesting one. Ben Hongo, PGA, is going to be with us, teach us a little bit about... Well, he's a runner, a foodie, a sushi cuisine lover, and lover of the game of golf, and he's a really good teacher. So he's going to be on the show to teach us some of the things we might want to, like, how can I make this ball go farther? And Michael Patrick Shields, my travel guru extraordinaire, joining us as well. And I think before we get into tee times and the weather forecast, I think Gary Williams. Gary Williams, are you with us already?
Danielle, how are you?
I'm great. It's a fabulous Saturday. How are you?
I'm doing terrific. I mean, it's 1 o'clock, and we're watching the Open Championship. Now, of course, I'm on the East Coast. For you, it's far different. I will tell you, I have a very dear friend who lives on the Big Island, and I've already been texting with him. He is certainly up watching.
Oh, yes. I was watching and watching and watching yesterday and this morning. Yesterday. Oh, Gary. Okay. First of all, just to introduce Gary Williams to you, if you don't, he's a magnificent person. I first got to know him, of course, watching his morning drive show on Golf Channel. He still has a Golf Channel show, Five Clubs. That's what he does on Golf Channel. Gary first hit his golf ball on the range in Boone, North Carolina, at the age of 6. He learned the game. He fell in love with every aspect of it. And that's why it's so much fun talking with Gary Williams about golf. Gary, yesterday when I was listening and listening and listening, boy, you'd think that DeChambeau had just violated more rules than anybody on the planet. And did you watch that part where they were talking about him damping down the grass around the ball?
Oh, gosh, yes. I mean, I've been consumed by it. Danielle, yesterday I went and spoke at the British Embassy in Washington. They had an assembled crowd. Obviously, the Open is in England.
Yes.
So I spoke to a lot of people who obviously, some love it a lot, some don't know it a great deal. But anyway, I was then traveling later in the day when this thing was unfolding and watched and was transfixed without having the sound on as to what was going on, and then got home last evening and watched a great deal, listened to a lot of reaction. That continues today. Rory McIlroy has just added another layer to all this with his own comments after his third round. And I will tell you, Danielle, and why this is, you know, when you watch somebody, whether it is, you know, intentional or not, that's the thing about the rules. The application of the rules are intended to be with an absence of ambiguity, and whether it was accidental, intentional, I'm certainly hoping it wasn't. But to me, my eye, my mind, he was in breach of the rule.
Yes, absolutely. And there were the two referees, so to speak.
Yes.
They needed somebody. He was so angry about their ruling, but their ruling seemed so obvious. For us watching on television, we could see very clearly that the grass was pushed down. And the argument, and then Bryson going on, I'm not going to play tomorrow. You know, it's, oh, huh? But then again, I was also kind of mortified by how much time was spent going over and over and over about Bryson DeChambeau's mess. It seemed to go on for hours on television. I was like, could we just switch? Can we change the subject? Somebody else, let's dig on them. You know, I don't know.
He's good television, and it doesn't mean that everybody has to like him. The most valuable assets whatever it is when it comes to melodramas on television or sports is pick a side. And I support him. I don't. I like him. I don't. And the truth is that for Live From last night, that was they should have put out the Christmas decorations. It was a gift. And yes, there is a redundancy and a saturation point where you're like, okay, I've got my position. I've seen enough. Let's move on. And I get that too. But again, back to what he did. And listen, players, and I've heard Max Homa, I've heard, you know, Xander Schauffele, I've heard obviously now most recently Rory, that this is no one called him a cheater. And I thought the rules officials in terms of, you know, them listening to him in a very demonstrative, dramatic way, performative way. And here's the other thing. He played brilliantly, he played beautifully. It's like, my God, I didn't think I was. If you see that, and again, just the rule itself is supposed to be absent of emotion and to support the principle of the play the course as you find it. The rule restricts, you know, what a player can do to improve any of the protective conditions affecting the stroke. The demonstrative steps that he was making, whether intentional or not, in my eyes and mind, obviously changed the direction of his stroke. That is shin high, calf high, knee high fescue. It was trampled down.
Yes, it was trampled down, to put it mildly. Boy, talk about making a bed and then having to lay in it. You know, it's okay. So he accepted eventually the two-stroke penalty, right? Because he, quote, accidentally impacted the lie of the land where the ball had come to rest. Right. He was stepping on it. Yeah, I mean, it was so obvious. I couldn't believe that he was arguing so much, and he should have just accepted it and moved on. Then last night it was said on television, and of course I always watch Golf Channel, and the question is, when did he decide he was going to play this morning?
I will say, and again, only he knows his state of mind.
Okay.
Not for a nanosecond did I not think he was not going to play.
Okay.
I mean, that's absurd. take your position, defend yourself, but the petulance and the melodramatic nature of holding any championship hostage to the idea that you're gonna decide in the morning, which he didn't. He immediately took to social media and got, you know, 1 zillion clicks and said, you know, on to tomorrow. And, you know, I'm going to, of course he was going to play. He was never not going to play. And that to me is totally unnecessary.
Yeah. Drama. You know, it's like, please, this is what happened to the good old days in golf. You know, I don't remember us having this much drama 20 years ago, but that's just the way it is. It makes for interesting.
Danielle, last year, Shane Lowry accidentally moved his ball. He sold his club, and you could see with the camera that the ball moved. He got dinged two strokes. It was the Open Championship. Do we recall it? Barely. Because he was disappointed, but he accepted it, and he moved on immediately.
Yeah, exactly. You know, move on. Let's I just want to go. I went to bed last night. The leaderboard was kind of all over the place. Scottie Scheffler was tied with 9 contenders, 4 under. The leaders were Lucas Herbert, Jackson Suber, Cameron Young, and Ryan Gerard. And the reason, and Sam Burns, he was in the group with Bryson DeChambeau, tied with Siwoo Kim. But, who, you know, Jackson Suber, he was in the lead on the first round, right? Who is Jackson Suber?
You know, I'll tell you, Danielle, this is another example of a player who everybody runs their own race, and some get a faster start than others. He's a young man who went to Ole Miss. Obviously, he was a wonderful player collegiately, and he has methodically, you know, continued to improve. And again, I'm not suggesting anybody should know intimate details of his progress. as a member of the PGA Tour, but he is having the best stretch of his career. If you go back and you look at the last 6 weeks of his season, you know, literally legitimately contending in a couple of tournaments, finishing inside the top five twice. So his form has been better than it's ever been. Obviously, this is the deep end of the pool for him. He's never been in this position before. But in terms of him playing well, not a surprise. In terms of him on top of a leaderboard of a major late on a Saturday, sure, it's a surprise. But he's playing the best golf of his life.
Yeah, it's fabulous to see somebody that it's like, I don't know who this person is, you know? And here he is at the top of the leaderboard. This is fantastic. So in addition to this young man playing so well, we had 62s all over the place. Lucas Herbert from Australia, Cameron Young, Ryan Gerard, Jackson Super, all tied for second as of play last night. And I've got to ask, you know, where are these 62s coming from? And Roel, what's going on with the golf course itself?
Yeah, you know, this is one of the things that, you know, the vagaries of the way that Open Championship venues can play year to year are part of the charm, but it's also part of the challenge. And what has transpired here as far as what has presented itself for these players to go out. They had 65 rounds yesterday under par. That is the most in any round in the history of the Open Championship. Okay, so you have very dry conditions, which has burned out the rough. Uh-huh. So this dense fescue rough that 2 weeks ago was much more penal than it is now. So if you miss the fairway, it's not that punitive to then go find your ball. You've got a reasonable lie. You can not only advance to the green, you can actually get traction on the impact of the strike. That, you know, you can hit a lot of good shots. So that's presented itself. Then the other thing that the RNA cannot do is make these greens 12 and 13 on the stip meter, because in an hour, it could be blowing 25 miles an hour.
Wow.
So that would mean that all of a sudden balls are oscillating on these greens. So you can't do that. So you have dry conditions. The golf course is shortened. Then you have greens that are slower relative to what these players are accustomed to playing. And thirdly, you have these intense dry conditions that have presented rough that is not nearly as difficult as it could have been and was 2 weeks ago. You add all that up. These guys are freaks. You give them those conditions, they're going to go out and do just that. And here's the thing, Danielle. It bothers me not for a moment. That's what this is.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I blanked on Royal Birkdale, Southport, England. This is the 154th Open Championship, 11th time in the past 72 years played at Royal Birkdale, designed by George Lowe in 1897. It was holding its own. Now, because of the conditions, it's going to be a little bit easier, so to speak. But Tiger Woods declared Royal Birkdale one of the hardest Open Championship venues. It's long, it's hard, just demanding, and you just don't get away with anything at Birkdale, is a quote. That's what it's amazing about it. It's a hard golf course where everything's in front of you. Nothing is really hidden. Nothing is over a mound or anything like that. Everything's right in front of you. It's like, here, come beat me.
And you know what? And I think that is one of the reasons why I'm very fond of Lynx golf, is that it's not just, you know, day to day, year to year. And here's one thing about what Tiger said. I think that's absolutely true. And the leader, by the way, we've had this slew of 62s. The leader is not 18 under par. The leader is 9 under par.
Yeah.
So yes, it's out there. But the idea that we have somebody or a handful of players that have gone out here and have undressed this place day after day after day, that hasn't been the case. There is enough challenge, nuance, quirkness to all of it that, you know, day after day, it's not going to produce 62, then someone's going to back it up with 64. And again, it's, and here's the thing about Tiger and Royal Birkdale. Early in his professional career, I really was fascinated to watch him struggle to understand that, you know, the difference between redlining and being aggressive and exercising prudence. And it was in 1998 at Royal Birkdale, wow, where Tiger really contended for the first time in an Open Championship. He finished in the top five. He was pushing Marco Mir and Brian Watts, who wound up being in that playoff. And 2 years later, he gave his own personal opus when he won at the Old Course at the age of 24 and put on a display of golf that I still believe is the greatest championship performance of his career. He won by more at other places, but he didn't win with more artistry than he did 2 years later after kind of, I think, starting to solve the Rubik's Cube, and it was at Royal Birkdale that he did it in 98.
That's fabulous. You have such good insight. I really appreciate you, and I want to go back to something that I don't think we're accustomed to in this game. It's kind of like earlier, this isn't like our grandparents' or even our parents' game of golf anymore, when we got people, Joaquin Niemann, throwing clubs, you know, breaking clubs. It just seems really strange. And then there's the spectator code of conduct. Apparently, you know, people aren't being polite anymore on the golf course. Abusive behavior toward players is, as one person put it. What do you see with this game? Because it's very, very popular, and yet we've got such strange things happening.
Yeah, I think that, you know, look, if you go back in time, whether it was even a young, and he would admit it himself and did, Bobby Jones was a club thrower. Bobby Jones walked off the golf course, the Old Course, declaring he hated it. And you know what? Like all of us, I'd like to believe we evolve, we mature, our perspective gets better, our lens on life and things gets wider, and he grew up. And so the idea of bad behavior on the golf course is not something that is to the blame of this generation of player, whether it be Tommy Bolt, Tiger Woods. Mm-hmm. Tiger had his temper tantrums. There are very few players that have not had their moments, but it doesn't mean that they should be absolved of that. And look, that application of rules and conduct is applied in other sports. There are unsportsmanlike conduct penalties in the National Football League. They occur every Sunday from September through the month of January. And that essentially is what, you know, golf is trying to figure out, and do it in a way that is practical, that the application of these conduct penalties or warnings are applied with reason. But I'm not, you know, declaring John Rahm, oh, look, you know, you need to go back and look at the way players used to, you know, conduct themselves. Listen, Curtis Strange, Lanny Watkins, I can make a list. And you know what? I don't blame any of them. It's the man in the arena. I have no idea what it's like to be in the boiling hot water of competition. I love it. It's why I love to do what I get to do, because these players perform with all these people watching, and they do things that are extraordinary. But and yes, they're going to have moments, but it doesn't mean that those moments, especially if it's repeated, are not going to be something that you're going to have to bear responsibility for. But again, I'm going to emphasize it again. These players are no different than the players that came before them. And whether you think it's more prevalent, I would suggest it's not.
Okay. That's maybe it's because we talk about it more often.
We see more of it. We have featured groups. If you wanna watch every shot of an elite player, God love you. You can watch all 18 holes. We see more, so we consume more. It doesn't mean that it wasn't happening as much when there was five cameras and we were lucky to get an hour of live coverage 50 years ago.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Point taken. Okay, four men from Golf Digest in this 156-man field have competed in the past three championships held on this beautiful golf course, Royal Birkdale, back in 1998, 2008, 2017. Stuart Sink, David Dubal, Patrick Harrington, and Justin Rose. So of those four, who do you think at this time has the best chance of winning?
Well, I don't think any of them, because three of them are over the age of 50. And unless the ghost of Tom Watson at 59 in 2009 comes out of the darkness. But I will say, here's the thing about all four of them, which, and again, all four of them did not necessarily win at Royal Birkdale. Padraig Harrington did. These are men who Harrington is in the Hall of Fame. I think Justin Rose is. I think that David Duvall, an argument can be made that David is a Hall of Fame player. He became number one in the world at a time that Tiger was the best player, which is an extraordinary accomplishment when David got there 25 years ago. And Stuart Sink, obviously, he beat Tom Watson in that playoff. This championship at Royal Birkdale, just at large, if you go back, as you pointed out, 11th time since 1954, Peter Thompson won twice a Royal Birkdale. He won five Opens. He's in the World Golf Hall of Fame. Johnny Miller won at Birkdale. Arnold Palmer's first win in an Open in 61 was at Birkdale. Seve Ballesteros announced his presence to the world at 19 in 1976 to embark on his own Hall of Fame career. Jordan Spieth won there. He will be in the World Golf Hall of Fame. He's got three major championships. Marco Mira won there in 98. He's in the Hall of Fame. Six players who won at Royal Birkdale are in the World Golf Hall of Fame. Spieth most certainly will be. That's seven. This place, it identifies not only the champion golfer of the year, it identifies generational players.
Excellent. Well, that's well said. Thank you so much. Scottie Scheffler, number one player in the world. Still? Is he?
Yes. I think he is. Now, you listen, this is the beauty of debate, and I say this not a lot, but reasonable minds can differ. Other than quantitative data, nobody's necessarily wrong. I just have a difference of opinion that somebody thinks somebody else is better than Scottie. Scottie this week is having a week that reminds me a lot of Tiger in 2007 at Oakmont at the U.S. Open. Tiger finished one shot out of the playoff in that U.S. Open that Angel Cabrera won. Do you know that he did not make one putt longer than 10 feet the entire week? And he missed the playoff by a shot. Scottie Scheffler's ball striking has been sublime. He hasn't made any putts of any length. He keeps giving himself chance after chance after chance. He just missed a birdie putt on 15. It was, of an appreciable length, about 35 feet. Now he's got about 5 feet for par. If he could just see a few go in, I still think he's got a very good chance. He's made nothing.
And that's scary,
Yes.
And it seems to be a trend right now for him, which is even scarier. It's like there's something, I don't know what it is, and I'm sure he wishes he knew too. But this, it just throws
sometimes
me off.
There's a lid on it. Sometimes it's not, his putting's off. Look, that's a small space. And I have friends, including my buddy, who's a proud member at Nenea, who is like, well, he's not, he's putting. He's not a good putter. I'm like, do you realize he's having the best putting season of his career? Here's the thing. Back to what you see. We see more of his shots than anybody.
Uh-huh.
More live shots of Scottie Scheffler. It's like, well, he misses everything. So does everybody else. We just don't see it.
Yes.
He's 14th on the PGA Tour in strokes gained putting. He's never statistically putted better in his career.
Well, there you have it. It is so true. Yeah, we focus on the one thing and we see the quote unquote mistake, and everybody else is probably doing the exact same thing somewhere else on the golf course. We're just not being shown. I mean, how many cameras do they have on course?
There are. Look, this is. It's interesting. Just to give your listeners some insight into the television production of this major. NBC is relying on what is called the world feed for a lot of this production. So this is not their production alone. So this is a blending of what the rest of the world sees, and then NBC controlling some of the live production. So, and what I would also say about live golf, and many of your listeners do know this, that that with all these balls in the air simultaneously, this is not the NFL or the NBA where there's one object and we never lose sight of it. There's a conveyor belt in the production truck, and most golf shots are shown plausibly live, meaning they're on a slip, a slight delay. So as soon as, you know, Lucas Herbert's shot is being shown right now, as soon as his shot comes to its conclusion, they'll go somewhere else. It doesn't mean that it's like, okay, now you go. No, it could be 5 seconds, 8 seconds, 12 seconds delayed. You want to show as much live as you can, but they're trying. What the coordinating producer is basically seeing all these screens in front of them, and basically it's like, okay, now we're going to go to 12 next, and then that's fed to the producer who says go to 12. Whether that is truly live or just slightly delayed, it's just dumb luck because that's golf on TV. We got 18 holes. We got a lot of competitors, and we got a lot of action going on all at the same time. So it's fascinating. And I will tell you, Danielle, if you want to lose your mind, spend an hour in a production truck. You'll never think that anything could possibly come out the other end with any semblance of form, but somehow they make it work.
I would actually enjoy being inside.
It's an amazing experience.
I bet it is. This is Gary Williams, host Five Clubs Golf on Golf Channel. Five Clubs Golf pays homage, that's where it came from, right? The original five golf clubs that formed the USGA, Shinnecock, Newport
Country. Chicago Golf Club, Newport Country Club, St. Andrews on the Hudson, and the Country Club at Brookline. And you know, look, I love it, you love it. And I appreciate what those five clubs in 1894 were trying to do, which was, hey, let's have some structure here, and let's figure out a way to contribute to the growth of the game. And all we're trying to do is you know, as you said, you know, pay homage and an homage to them.
Yes.
And do it in the most modest way. Hey, let's try to contribute in the best way we can, and that's why we came up with the name Five Clubs. And the other reason, you can't shorten the name. Everything has been shortened in this world. Everything turns into an acronym. I've yet to have somebody say, hey, I really like five C's. Thank God it's just five clubs.
That's perfect. And also, I want you to know, folks, that Gary Williams was a teaching professional at Ridgewood Country Club. And I think that is so cool that you know all aspects of this game. And what would be, if I may, I'm springing this on you, I apologize. What would be the one thing you would tell somebody who's getting into the game? What should they do to get better at it and they're frustrated?
What I would say is, and it kind of goes back to what I said about, you know, players like a Jackson Suber. Hey, you're on no timeline here. There's no expiration date as to when you should be better, when your handicap should go from 22 to 18. Find the fun in the fun in it. And if the fun in it for you is hitting chip shots, then do a lot of that. If the fun of it is getting on a range and teeing it high and hitting drivers, do that. What I would also say is, don't let others make the game intimidating to you. You find the things about it that you like. Find the people you like to play with. Find the golf courses and the ranges and the short courses that appeal to you. And find your own progress and identify that. And here's the last thing. All this stuff is, and I get it. It is inherently hard, but it's not impossible. And again, the idea that when people say, well, the game is hard and you're already 30, you're never going to get better. Who are they to tell you what you can and cannot do?
Yes, sir.
Find your own fun. And whatever that fun is, that's your definition. And don't anybody else let you be defined by the way you find enjoyment in the game. If you don't play 18 holes, that doesn't make you any less of a golfer than me.
Thank you, Gary Williams, host, executive producer of Five Clubs on Golf Channel and Sirius XM. Thanks, Gary, very much.
Danielle, it's always a thrill and a pleasure. Aloha to all your listeners. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the golf. Enjoy your own game.
Thank you. Aloha. We're coming back. John Hagen's going to be with us in the clubhouse. It was so cool. Remember Nelly Korda and Scottie Scheffler missed cuts 2 weeks ago, I think it was? You know, it's just something very similar happened not that long ago. And they were equally famous people. Right after this, my name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
PGA Junior League is a fun team golf experience for kids that the entire family can enjoy.
Boys and girls learn the game from PGA and LPGA professionals and have a great time with friends.
Find your team and get ready for a fun and exciting PGA Junior League season.
No high fives for me? What is
that? And want to see you out playing in your jersey and having fun? Visit PGAJuniorLeague.com.
Right. Aloha Power. The After the Rain sale continues. It was still raining this morning when I got up around, oh, I don't know, four. Kind of give the grass a little something to get green with. So to help you through the chaos of El Nino, you remember that was not fun. And people are still recovering. I mean, it was devastating to so many across the state. And Aloha Power's After the Rain sale features Honda generators, pumps, chainsaws, whackers, trimmers, and a whole lot more. Get in touch, get down there. And it's up to 25% off. We have service, parts, accessories for every rider, from home to commercial sized. You mow it, blow it, bag it, done. And get what you need. It's at Aloha Power Equipment, Evile, next to the Costco gas station in Evile and in Waipahu.
Who do you call when your home appliance isn't working? Pacific Repair Services. Pacific Repair Services, located at 540 Lagoon Drive across from JN Motors. PRS does repairs, maintenance, and sales. Call us at 808-736-4080 or find us on the web at prscares.com. We fix, maintain, and sell refrigerators, stoves, microwaves, and dishwashers at fabulous prices. Rely on Pacific Repair Services, because your home appliances have to work. What's a great way to shape up your golf? Polish your swing at the Newtown Golf Driving Range, located in Iaea. Stop by to warm up before your round, or wind down after work and hit a few balls. Enjoy great food from our popular Newtown Cafe and check out the Asau Golf Shop for the most up-to-date golf equipment and club repairs. The Newtown Driving Range, operated by the Casey Nakama Golf Group. Good golf, good food, and good fun.
Ah, here's the local rule sign. Keep it in the fairway. It speeds up play. Now, back to Danielle Tucker.
Yes, I've got the forecast for you. Finally, sunny. That's the forecast. Isolated showers in the morning, high 83 to 88. Yes, pushing 90. East winds about 15 miles per hour and chance of rain 20%, depending where you are, of course. Sunny is the forecast for us for tomorrow. Isolated showers in the morning. Yes, it sounds like I'm reading the same thing, but this is exactly what I got from the National Weather Service. The high between 83 and 88. Northeasterlies are coming at us. Not the easterlies so much. Northeasterlies, there's going to be a little chill in the air, I betcha. Winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Chance of rain, 20%. Now let's go to tee times for today. The fishermen are on the golf course at Makalei. 836, 918, 1026. Those are your tee times, Makalei, on the Big Island. Volcano Golf Club has an 832, 924, and a 1048. The Kauai Teachers, they're on the golf course at Poipu. There's an 840, a 910, and an 1120. if you'd like to play. Those were open the last time we checked. Give them a call. Kauai Lagoons has an 848 and a 952. The Divers are on the golf course. I don't know. You know, why not? The Divers at Pearla Kalaauau. And if you'd like to play, there's an 838 and a 928 at last check. Hawaii Kai has an 852, 1010, 1128. Sand Fleas. They call themselves the Sand Fleas. I guess they're in the sand a lot. Yeah, Turtle Bay is where they're playing. 902, 1054, 1102, tee times you might want to call up and get a hold of. The Jungle Guys. Boy, we have a lot of creative people this morning. The Jungle Guys are at the Royal Hawaiian Country Club. And by the way, the back nine is kind of like a jungle at Royal Hawaiian. It's very interesting. 836, 918, and 1012. And Ava Beach Golf Course has an 830, a 930, a 1022. The Surfers are at Bayview. They're playing golf. 908, 1006, 1124. The last time we checked, those were the tee times that were open. Wailea on Maui, 830, 930, 1003. Management is on the golf course, the Gold Course. Emerald Course has an 856, a 908, and an 1102. The staff, they're on the Emerald Course. I'm serious about this. The crew is on the Blue Course. 936, 1008, they're open. And we also have at Maui Nui, 908, 10 o'clock, and 1156. There you have it. Okay, now, John Hagan, welcome into the clubhouse.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Talking about fishermen playing golf, I wish I were. I happen to be on the wharf in San Francisco now in a cold, chilly morning getting on FDR's boat that he had on the Potomac when he was president.
Wow. Where is that boat and how do you get on it?
Well, I was invited for some event left over from 4th of July. So I have no clue, but I'm sure there's a short story here for me.
Speaking of stories, Play Away Please. Peter Hagan, author, Play Away Please, the tale of the sale of golf's greatest icon, the St. Andrews Old Course Starters Box. How did you get inspired to write Play Away Please?
Well, the starters box, when you think about sports and they all have their icons, whether they're arenas or whatever, and they're usually icons to a specific team. The starters box is an icon to everybody, pro, you and I, Tiger Woods, Jack Nicklaus, and everybody in between, because we've all had to pay our dues there to play the greatest old course in the world. And they were going to destroy it, and I figured there's a way to save it, and I got lucky.
Wow. How did you do that?
It was happening that the R&A clubhouse, which is next door, was going to be refurbished, and they thought all of their plumbing lines went underneath the starter's box and then into the beach and the ocean on that wonderful beach that was used in Chariots of Fire.
Yeah.
So they decided we'll just tear down the box, and I said, you can't do that, and they wound up putting it up for an international auction. And I was the low bidder, or the high bidder.
You got it. Where are you keeping it?
Excuse me. Sure. It was taken apart and put on a ship, brought through the Panama Canal to Los Angeles.
Wow.
And was to be reinstalled on one of the golf courses in La Quinta around PGA West. And by the time I got it here, the man that was putting it on his golf course was in federal prison.
Oh.
And so the feds had impounded it, all the construction activity that was going on with the housing. And people that weren't paid their bills, like plumbers and electricians and everything else, would steal everything they can. So parts of the box got stolen along with them going home with their copper wiring and wow. toilets and sinks and everything else. It was an absolute mess.
Wow.
But the crew, unbeknownst to me, when they were loading the overseas boxes that it was coming over in.
Yeah.
They took some of the soil, some of the sod off the old course and put it in. And by the time the box got to California, which was 5 weeks later, the sod had grown about 2.5 inches. So all of a sudden, the feds come again and say they thought somebody was hiding drugs in the sod.
Oh, no. Well, this is, you should write a book about this.
Yeah. So all of a sudden, there's a book.
Yes, Play Away Please, the tale of the sale of golf's greatest icon, the St. Andrews Old Course Starters Box. Boy, you know, if it could only talk about the different places it's seen. And 5 weeks, that's a long sale. John Peter Hagan, a real estate developer, architect, member of Hazeltine. Do you still have that apartment in Paris?
What? I didn't hear you, Daniel. What?
I said, do you still have the apartment in Paris?
I'm sorry, you cracked up on me. Try me one more time.
Okay. The apartment in Paris. Do you still have the apartment in Paris?
No, I do not have my apartment in Paris any longer. I sold that about 5 years ago.
Okay.
Much to my chagrin, but that happens sometimes.
Yeah, you know, we can only be in so many places at so many times, and then. So, lots going on in the world of golf, lots going on with John Peter Hagan. What do you think of the Pebble Beach caddy issue? And folks, if that you're, what? Well, it used to be the caddies were like independent contractors, and you got there and you paid them and they would take you around. Things have changed enormously at Pebble Beach. Can you tell us a little bit about this?
Well, sure. There's always been, almost universally, caddies worked on their own for their player. And an organization came along and talked to the folks at Pebble Beach and said, we'd like to take that off your hand and organize these guys and, of course, make some money. But you have to think that Pebble Beach, on their list, they have 374 caddies.
Wow.
And that's to cover four courses: Pebble, Spyglass Hill, Monterey Peninsula, and Peter Hay. So it's not like the old days where there's 10, 12 high school kids sitting at a barn waiting to get a call from the caddy mister Saturday morning to go caddy for their favorite member. And it's turned into a real mess. California is not an easy place to mess around with right-to-work rules, number one, as we all know. And it's gone beyond that, where the caddy said, we want a union.
Yeah.
So 2 weeks ago, they voted to join a union.
Yeah, the vote was 180 to 56 to unionize. That's incredible.
It really is, and it's just an absolute mess right now. I hope in a couple of weeks, or probably be a couple of months, I can call you and have it worked out for everybody's advantage, but that's not going to happen.
It used to be so that the guys would, you know, wait, and somebody's going to play. The guys who were playing, they pay the caddy straight up, everything, do the whatever, play the round with the caddy. And then some caddy master came along and decided they were going to make it streamlined, you know, and they were going to get paychecks. And then I guess the caddies were like, this is crazy. I'm not making as much money now as I was making before Caddy Master came along. Then they decide they're going to unionize. I don't know if that's in their best interest, but maybe it is, because then they can set their own how much they're going to, you know, get paid. It's just like you said, it is a mess. It's a shame. I always think of Pebble Beach as being, you know, perfect, obviously, in my dreams.
Well, yeah, in your dreams, that's right. And then you add in things like, well, withholding taxes, health benefits, and on and on and on. And somebody's just got to say, wait a minute, it's one man working for one man. He pays cash. That's his life, his livelihood. It's an honor to be a caddy. Get on with your life.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Well, let's go back to what's happening right now in the UK. Royal Birkdale, you were talking about the uniqueness of Royal Birkdale and its membership, for that matter. Could you kind of give us an idea? The inside?
Well, it's one of the very unique courses. There's lots of courses in Europe and the U.S., of course, that have uniqueness to them. But one of the things of Birkdale is there is a club within the club of members who also have their own clubhouse on the property. Happens to be an old clubhouse from 60, 70 years ago. But their job at no pay is to replace divots, take care of seating, raking bunkers at the end of the day, and doing other routine tasks to keep that course. And in exchange, they get to play golf.
Wow. So they're not going to unionize.
That's right. Yeah, boy, that's for sure. Yeah, you don't bring that word. Yes, that word is not in the English dictionary.
Oh boy! There's just, you know, it's fun. It's fun. What's going on in the world is just amazing. So yeah. So in Pebble Beach, they're unionizing. In the UK, you get to, if you're a part of this group of people, how do you get into the club so that you can work a little bit so you can play golf?
That's right.
Yeah,
so
I want to
maybe, you know, I figured that a lot of the wags over here were saying that Scheffler missed the cut 2 weeks ago, you know, to break his record. The reason he did it was so he could apply to for membership.
Oh, dear. Oh, yes. Okay, now, John Hagan, we were talking about this, and you brought this up to my Nelly Korda and Scottie Scheffler missed cuts. That seems out of question to begin with. But Nelly Korda and Scottie Scheffler missed cuts 2 weeks ago. And you brought it to my attention that something similar happened not that long ago, but before.
That's right. The last time the two number one players of the men's and women's tours missed the cut the same week was in 2006. And the two that missed the cut then were Annika Sorenstam and Tiger Woods.
Yeah, I just think that's an incredible, I don't know. It, you know, for it to happen to Tiger Woods and Annika Sorenstam and then Nelly Korda and Scottie Scheffler.
Yeah.
Yeah. John Peter Hagan, author, Play Away, Please, The Tale of the Sale of Golf's Greatest Icon, the St. Andrews Old Course Starters Box. I'd like to be at St. Andrews someday. Thank you so much for being inside the clubhouse.
You're welcome, Bert. And one parenthetical thing to Annika and Tiger. There, a golfer, his name is Neil Coles. Here's a great piece of unknown knowledge. It has no value, but his name was Neil Coles. He had a fear of flying, so he never came to the U.S., and he went 7 years without missing a cut on the European Tour.
Wow. That's phenomenal.
Yeah, he won 54 times over his playing years. Incredible.
What's his name again?
Neil Coles. C-O-W-L-E-S.
Okay. Coles. Yeah. I'm going to have to look him up. Thank you.
Yeah, do. I'll send you some other information on him.
Great. John, okay. Talk to you soon.
Very good.
Thank
Play
you.
Well. And whatever you have in your hand, play it well, or drink it well.
There you go. Aloha. We're coming back with Ben Hongo, PGA. Yes, he's going to teach us. Do you know that Ben Hongo is a foodie, a runner, a sushi cuisine lover, and lover of the game of golf? He's a member of the Aloha Section PGA since 1989, when he first accepted an assistant golf professional position at Kapalua. And we'll be back after this. My name is Danielle Tucker, and this is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
When Sears opened here more than 60 years ago, who made all their signs? The Honolulu Sign Company, to 1724 Hart Street off Waikamula Road on the Everside. They do building marquees, letter signs and lighted signs, parking and tow signs of every kind, OSHA compliant signs, custom signs of all types. Call 847-4047. Licensed and insured Honolulu Sign, serving Hawaii since 1939, where quality and service have not been forgotten. Call 847-4047 now.
Poipu Bay on Kauai, South Shore. Share our home with need a gift for that special someone? Tired of giving fruit baskets you know are getting recycled? Give a Poipu Bay Golf Gift Certificate. Whether it's a birthday, business, or anniversary, here's the one gift that is always the right size and the perfect date. Just give us a call and it will be waiting for you to pick up or mail to your office. There may even be time to sneak in a nine. Call us for the perfect gift, where great golf is played every day at Poipu Bay on the Garden Isle.
What does your company sell? Do you provide a service, fill a need, sell insurance or real estate, or that must-have new car? Become a sponsor of Danielle Tucker's The Golf Club radio show. We reach a pure target audience of business owners. Let us help you. We have affordable rates and it's easy to do. Just email rick@radiogolfclub.com or call Rick at 808-220-1000. Reach the people like you who are too busy running their business. That's Rick at radiogolfclub.com or call 808-220-1000.
Hey, Mark Rolfing here. The First Tee Hawaii is a nonprofit organization that helps kids build character, confidence, and life skills through golf. And we need volunteers like you to coach our next generation of golfers. No matter your skill level, our free coach training gives you tools to mentor kids. We have locations on all the islands, and enrollment is open now for our Level 1 Coach Certification. Call 808-500-1515.
Off a tree, hit a rock, and bounce next to the pin. That's my kind of golf. Now, back to Danielle Tucker on The Golf Club.
And Ben Hongo, PGA member of PGA of America, the largest sports organization composed of PGA of America golf professionals who work every day to grow interest and participation in the game of golf. Hey, Ben.
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
Good, good. Watching everything going on at Royal Birkdale, hey, did you get a chance to see some of that?
Yes, I have. Yes, it's been good.
Yeah, what did you think about DeChambeau and his issue with arguing with the reps, you know, the umpires?
Yeah, I mean, I see two points. I mean, I see both sides of it, but I do believe that it was a broken rule. I mean, I think he definitely laid those things down where it probably did affect, and the rules are kind of, written the way it's written. You know, it's just, if it's possible, something like that, affects your swing or something like, something in that whatever. I'm sure Bryson had no intent of doing that, but it just happened.
So, yeah. You know. I think when he was arguing, I think the whole thing was, I didn't mean to do it. But it just seemed like it was damped down. Like everything had been made so that it could be easier to hit the ball.
yeah, for sure.
You know,
for sure.
And it was hard to watch. And then when he went off and said, I'm not going to play tomorrow. I was like, seriously, boy? I mean, come on, you know? And
yes.
And then for hours we were listening to the guys talk. Well, you can't say that because then if they try to set up the course and get the people and who are going to be playing this time at this time at this time, and if he doesn't show up, it messes the whole thing up.
Yep.
He was there Saturday, you know. Oh boy, today is Saturday, right?
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
So as the head teaching professional at Kapalua, Ben Hongo, what can you help us with in the way of the short game? Because sometimes, you know, okay, I can't hit it that far, but once I get near the green, I really want to at least get on it smartly, if that's a good mm-hmm. a word to use. What do you recommend to the beginner or the intermediate player?
So, you know, I think, you know, any golf shot, whether you're hitting a drive or, you know, hitting a 3-foot putt, everything kind of starts with a setup. So, you know, in the short game, if we're talking about just a finesse chip shot, like to say just a normal 10-yard chip shot, you know, with a medium height of the, you know, of the trajectory and, you know, just a normal type of spin on the golf ball. You know, I think the setup is really, really important to master. I think most amateurs, you know, they tend to set up too neutral from a standpoint of weight distribution. So there's too much weight on the trail foot or the back foot, and you know what I think what I see a lot of amateurs do, or even get better players that have a hard time with chipping. Is that they're not their low point of their swing generally gets too far behind the golf ball, so you know players will end up chunking it or they'll start to scoop up and start sculling it across the green. So I think having mastering the setup, I think that's the first thing I would try to do, is to make sure that you know your weight is on the lead leg. You got some. Shaft lean going towards the target, and that's, you know, and having the appropriate ball placement and so on and so on. So that's the first thing I would try to do. And then, you know, second part of it is, you know, most people, you know, some people who do understand getting on the front side, you know, in their setup, but they'll start to fall backwards. They'll go into the back foot. And, you know, and that leads to a lot of bad, you know, bad stuff. So I just think that the body needs to be, especially in the short game, needs to be moving slightly towards a target. And, you know, and I probably put in final thing, except for putting, I really don't like the phrase of keeping your head down. I like the chest to actually come up through the golf ball, especially in chipping, because we're trying to avoid hitting the ground too intensively.
Yeah, I hear you talking about footwork, and that, you know, I don't think a lot of people think of the footwork that's necessary for the balance, for the all that, to then use the club to make your approach. And that I really appreciate that. So, could you just again in putting, where should my weight be distributed to?
So I think putting, you know, there's a little bit, longer leash when it comes to what, you know, what's proper, and the reason why is because the angle attack with the putter is a little bit different than the chipping. So, you know, chipping, you're trying to hit the golf ball on a descending blow, and putting, you're trying to hit the ball more on the more sweeping or more ascending blow. And the club never really, you know, makes contact with the ground. So I like the in putting, I don't think you need to lean into the left side as much. There are players I do that lean into the left side, but I think you could be a little bit more neutral, you know, let's say 50-50 with your weight. And, you know, and I like the ball placement to be a little bit more forward. And I personally don't like a lot of forward lean on the shaft with the putter. If you do, and which is fine, just make sure your putter is fitted for, you know, fitted for your setup. Now, most putters off the rack will have about 3 to 4 degrees aloft. So if you like to get the handle forward, say 4 or 5 degrees, now you're not going to have any loft on the putter. So you may need to get some loft. So I like my hands a little bit ahead of the golf ball. So my putter actually has about five. So I always add about a degree of loft to my putter.
Cool. Wow. That was a perfect example. Thank you. Yeah. And I was looking on this putting, and I think you said you may want a wall. You may want a wall behind you, or a ruler or an alignment rod in front of you. That way the putt goes back and forth along the line. That's interesting.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think alignment's really, really important. So, you know, and when I teach, I use a lot of lines on the ground. So, I'll use chalk line on the putting green. Yeah, if you ever go to like, you know, to a tour event and you go to the putting green, you'll see lines all over the putting green, you know, whether it's a chalk line or chalk pin or whatever it is. And, you know, I call it my four S's when it comes to putting, you know, to prop a good putting. So the first S is the setup and the stroke. Second S is the start line. And to me, start line is really, really important. That's the fundamentals. So if I can't get my ball to start on the correct line, I mean, to me, nothing else really works. And then you have your third S, which is a slope reading, which obviously is affecting the start line. And the last is probably the hardest thing is the speed control. And, you know, so once I can, I'm pretty comfortable getting my ball on a start, correct start line. Then from there, I pretty much just work on my speed.
Wow. You know, I like to go slow. That way, you know, it might be two, but at least I'm close.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's really good. Setup, start line, slope reading, speed control. When people come to you for lessons, what do they usually ask you? What do they need?
You know, I just have a conversation with my students. So, you know, I don't like to force anything into anybody. So we'll talk about, you know, what they need and stuff like that. So, you know, one of the standard questions I ask is, you know, if you're playing your home golf course, what's your scoring range? You know, so let's just say a person goes, oh, you know, if I play good, I shoot 75. If I play bad, I shoot 85. And I'll ask, oh, well, what's the difference when you shoot 75 and 85? And, you know, so we can kind of gather some information on their weaknesses so we can work on that and figure out where we got to go from there. And then, again, I think it really starts with the setup. So, you know, with everything. So we start from there and then kind of move on.
Right on. Yeah, the basics, getting comfortable in the positions that you have to be in. Some people have a hard time with their wrist, I think. And how do you control the wrist and not let it kind of move the club with places you don't want it to go?
Yeah, so I think the wrist movement is very, very important. And, you know, what I try to do, let's just, if I got a beginner, I try to get them basically swinging a golf club from a start position to parallel, the first parallel back. So half, you know, basically half swing. And then from there, swing the other side of it. So I call it position two to position eight. And then I try to get my players to not use wrist at all at first, so they can kind of make some contact with the golf ball or the tee or what I'm trying to get them to hit, and then slowly engage the wrist. I don't I don't, you know, move right into, hey, this is how you use a wrist first. I actually try to downplay it a little bit, uh-huh. and then little by, you know, then slowly insert the wrist motion into the golf swing. But it's really, you know, everybody uses their wrist very differently, and when they load and when they unload and whatnot. So it's super hard to just kind of say, hey, this is how everybody, you know, like if you look at Scotty, well, you know, like John Rahm would be a kind of a really, you know, interesting because he takes the golf club back and there's almost no wrist talk, but he kind of down cocks the club. And there are other players that, you know, say Nick Faldo back in the day, you know, he started off with the wrist cock and then turned into it. So everybody does it a little differently. There's no right. There's no one right way of doing that.
I like that. K-O-R-L, Y-N-I, Honolulu. Now, for those of us who, you know, like to see the ball go far, far away, how do you learn to hit the ball farther?
Yeah, so I think there are a lot of different things. So obviously I got to somehow move that golf club faster. And, you know, how do we do it? And, you know, there's been a lot of talk about ground force, you know, lately. Right? You know, people call it a ground reaction force. So I just did actually an Instagram piece on it just a couple of days ago. So people can kind of check it out. So my Instagram handle is at Ben Hongo PGA. But, as we push into, you know, I think a lateral motion to the left side from the top of the golf swing is a big, big, power producer. And then obviously rotation. So you have to know how to use the ground. I used to have a kid that I worked with for a long time. He ended up playing golf for University of Hawaii, graduated maybe about 10 years ago. So anyway, so, you know, he was kind of a smaller kid. I mean, you know, a little bit bigger than me, but not that much bigger than me, but you should see what he would do to the turf when I'm giving him golf lesson, you know, with his feet, because he's just grinding that ground. I mean, and it's, you know, and for, you know, relatively modest sized kid, he hit the golf ball a mile. But, you know, you could, if you saw him hitting golf balls on the driving range, you can kind of see, you know, you look at Scotty, you know, how his feet, they move around, they slide around. But he's not sliding around on purpose. He's sliding around because as he pushes into the ground, somehow the grip gives away and then he kind of slides around. So, that's where a lot of the power comes from. Obviously, getting into the gym, getting more mobility, getting more strength, all those things help. Even getting your golf clubs fitted is really important. Another thing I say to people all the time is hitting the golf ball in a sweet spot. I think that's really, really important. So, I think those are just kind of ideas. When I do like a driver lesson and stuff, one of the things demonstrations I'd like to do is I'll hit a tee shot off of my knees. Wow. And there's a drill that I used to do with my coach a long time ago. So I'm pretty proficient at it. And I can hit it some, you know, pretty far off of my knees. And I just try to explain to people the power of the sweet spot opposed to power of speed.
Oh, that's
and
nice.
Because, you know, because a lot of people, when they try to swing the golf club, because they don't know how to use the ground, they just use the upper body to try to create force. And they kind of, it makes them kind of go all over the place. They start moving around and they can't hit the golf ball on a sweet spot. So, you know, you can swing the golf club 120 miles per hour, but if you miss the sweet spot by an inch, I mean, that's going to, you know, that's a huge power leak. I think it's important to hit the ball in a sweet spot.
Yeah, and what you're talking about, if I'm understanding you correctly, is we actually need to push down with our legs to get more force into the swing and then into the contact with the ball. And that the leg and the feet action is kind of a downward, which is contrary to what you think, because you're swinging up, but you're coming down, and that's where you really want to push in to the earth, yeah. as you said.
Yeah. It's an Isaac Newton law, right? So, you know, if you have a force going in one direction, you have to have the equal amount of force going in the opposite direction. So if I want to go forward, I got to push backwards. I know it sounds weird, and that's my Instagram, whatever. But really, I'm trying to explain that in the simplest term. I don't know if anybody in Hawaii started to use ground force measuring devices and stuff like that.
Interesting.
That's going to be my next purchase.
Oh yeah.
Because I think measuring it, I think is really important. The problem with force is you can't see it. You know, so that's a problem.
The only the only time you can see it is when the ball all of a sudden goes whack and whoa.
correct.
Then that's the ground force. It's in the air now. I think it's wonderful. Okay, and I guess I also want how to get the most out of practice. You know, a lot of people just hit the ball, or at least try to. That's me. You know, I don't always make contact. But how to get most out of the practice?
Okay, so the first thing I would say I've said this for the last couple of years to my students, is the best $80 you can spend for your golf game is a tripod.
What?
A tripod, for your phone, right? Because seeing is believing. So, if you're practicing blindly, you're just kind of taking a guess. So if you take a golf lesson, I'm assuming that 95% of golf instructors use some type of a video. So I use a software, it's called OnForm. So all my students, basically get to use the OnForm for free under my name or whatever. Anyway, so I go, man, if you got an iPhone, you got just any phone, just get a tripod for $80. And, you don't have to look at your golf swing every single time, but if you take a golf lesson and you and your instructor have discussed about what you're trying to do with your golf swing, and you have a good visualization of that, take a video of it. And, if you don't have a tripod, have a friend take a video of your golf swing and then look at it and see if you're doing it correctly or not, or if you're going in the direction that you want to go to. But, because that's what most people are trying to do. Do it through feel, and feel not is always real, so it can fool you a little bit. So I think knowing exactly what you want to try to do. Also, when you do take a golf lesson, ask your instructor, how should you practice? And that's kind of my big thing is, I teach through drills. So when I'm teaching, any player, I'm giving them drills. So when they go home, they have something to practice with. So I think that's really important. Number two is to create a really important, a really clean practice station using alignment rods or whatever you got to use. So, don't just go out there, with no alignment or, with no plan at all. And I think, the third thing is having some type of a plan. In your practice, what are you going to try to do, and whatnot?
Excellent.
And and work on your weaknesses. Make sure that if you're not very good with a driver, don't just hit five drivers and think you got to go out there and grind it out. Unfortunately.
Yeah, well, that is the truth, isn't it? And I love that feel is not always real. Gosh, that's fabulous. That's, that's a bottom line. Just because you think it feels right doesn't mean it is. That's why making a video is absolutely perfect. If you'd like to get in touch with Ben, his email is benhongopga@gmail.com. And that's HONGO, benhongopga@gmail.com. You said on Instagram, you're at Ben Hongo BJA. Excuse me, I lost my voice. Ben Hongo PGA. Is that?
Yeah. That's the one.
That's Instagram. Okay, cool. Awesome. This has been great. I appreciate your time. Thank you so much, Ben Hongo.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. We'll talk again soon, I hope. Okay?
Awesome. Thank you so much. We'll see you soon.
See you soon. Ben Hongo, runner, foodie, sushi, cuisine lover, and lover of the game of golf. And we'll be back after this. Michael Patrick Shields is in the house. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
I'm Colin Morikawa, 2020 PGA Champion. In every golf journey, some goals can feel like an uphill climb, even intimidating, especially if you're on your own. But in the game of golf, helping hands are all around us. Whether you dream of a championship or you're just trying to make golf your thing, PGA coaches have industry-leading knowledge, guidance, and support to help you take the next step. Just like my PGA coach, Rick Sessinghouse, has always done for me. Wherever your golf journey is headed, a PGA coach can get you there. Find your PGA coach at pga.com/coach.
You know, to help you get through the chaos this last weather event did to us this year, I don't even want to talk about what it was, but it happened twice. It was scary. I was on my lanai trying to keep the water from getting into my apartment. I'm like pushing it back. I still have cardboard on my lanai because it was soaking up the water so well. I mean, it wasn't fun. So to help you get through the chaos and get back on track, Aloha Power's After the Rain sale features the Honda generators, the pumps, the chainsaws, the whackers, trimmers, and more that you may need if you've got a house. And so many people had a house. Yeah. So you can go to Aloha Power Equipment, up to 25% off. They have all of the things that you'll need to take care of around the house. We have service, parts, accessories for every rider, from home to commercial sized. You mow it, you boat, blow it, you bag it, and you're done. Get what you need. It's all at Aloha Power Equipment. Evile, next to the Costco gas station, you'll see their sign. You can't miss it. In Waipahu as well.
Who do you call when your home appliance isn't working? Pacific Repair Services. Pacific Repair Services, located at 540 Lagoon Drive across from JN Motors. PRS does repairs, maintenance, and sales. Call us at 808-736-4080 or find us on the web at prscares.com. We fix, maintain, and sell refrigerators, stoves, microwaves, and dishwashers at fabulous prices. Rely on Pacific Repair Services, because your home appliances have to work. What's a great way to shape up your golf? Polish your swing at the Newtown Golf Driving Range, located in Iaea. Stop by to warm up before your round, or wind down after work and hit a few balls. Enjoy great food from our popular Newtown Cafe, and check out the Asau Golf Shop for the most up-to-date golf equipment and club repairs. The Newtown Driving Range, operated by the Casey Nakama Golf Group. Good golf, good food, and good fun.
Man, I thought that was in the cup. It bounced out. I've been robbed. Now, back to the clubhouse with Danielle Tucker.
You know, Michael Patrick Shields is my travel guru extraordinaire. He's around the world. You know, I can't keep up with him. Michael Patrick Shields is an award-winning syndicated radio and television talk show host, best-selling author, travel writer, actor, background actor. He's hosted The Michigan's Big Show, starring Michael Patrick Shields since 2007. He's been on national television. He's written for international publications. He's hosted broadcasts from around the world, including Hollywood, Havana, Monaco, Ireland, Jerusalem, Italy, Germany, Washington, D.C., Paris, South Africa, Australia, Thailand, and a whole lot more. And welcome into the clubhouse, Michael Patrick.
And don't forget Kona and Kanapali. But it's been too long.
Yes, it has been way too long. It's been like over a year or more, right?
It's been since 2015, last time I was in, maybe 2014, last time I was in Hawaii. And I was there with you, and I came into your studio.
2014? When are you coming back to Hawaii, for heaven's sakes? We got to do something about it. But I got to ask you. I got to ask you something. Is the Del Mar Raceway for horses or cars? Because you know I love horses.
I'm at opening weekend right now for the Del Mar Raceway, which is just on the north side of America's finest city, San Diego, California.
Uh-huh.
Affectionately known as the Oval by the Sea, and it is horse racing.
Yes!
And, yes, so this is the beginning of the meet. And it switches off with Santa Anita, which is up there near Pasadena. And so, like, half the year you get Del Mar, and half the year you get Santa Anita. And they're both so beautiful, and, like, going back in time, and just beautiful, the sport of kings, right?
But, yes.
They are in beautiful spots in the mountains and next to the ocean, and so I'm checking it out. I've been to Santa Anita a number of times, but first time to Del Mar.
Yeah, well, if you had said, you know, Santa Anita, I'm like, yeah, it's horses. We said Del Mar, I'm like, Del Mar, I'm okay, because it's, and I'm one of those people that I've always been in love with horses since I was like five.
That's why I was laughing so hard when you asked if it was cars or races. But I can see why you'd be confused, because I've been very much into the Formula One lately.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
So, you know, yeah. But the good thing is, if you do come to Del Mar or San Diego, there are plenty of golf courses to play here, including, of course, the famous Torrey Pines, where the PGA Tour and the U.S. Open has been. That's right, you know, two exits away. And then there's a resort called the Grand Del Mar that has a Tom Fazio-designed course. And they also have a five-star hotel and a five-star restaurant along with the golf course. So you can really spoil yourself there.
I love it. Now, is there a lot of wagering going on at Del Mar?
Beautiful stuff. And right off the I-5. And so it's easy for you to get to wherever you need to get to. And you can fly to San Diego. You can fly to... you can fly to John Wayne Airport in Orange County. You can fly to LAX or take a boat, like, from Hawaii. Get here.
Yes, just get here. Can you hear me okay?
Can you what?
Can you hear me okay?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I guess that answers your question.
Yeah.
What? Yeah, I can hear you. And the world can hear you, Danielle, because you're available worldwide on the internet and on radio throughout the Hawaiian Islands.
There you go. But are they wagering? Is there a lot of do people bet at Del Mar on the horses?
Oh, of course. I mean, that's what it's all about. I have a sixth race wheel that I'm going to load up for and hope for the best. But as they all, the old saying is, the nags are tough to figure. And so, you know, bet with your head, not over it.
Never call a horse a nag.
I don't know. That's what the phrase is. I didn't write it.
Yeah, right on. All right. And what did you say you have in your hand? It's a wagering sheet or something. What is that?
Well, I will say, you know, like, since you mentioned it, Bob Baffert, who people, they see him on the Kentucky Derby and the Triple Crown races every year, but he's got horses here at Del Mar in this meet.
Oh, wow.
So I'm sure he will be there.
Right.
He's the one with the white hair and the blue sunglasses.
He's a
celebrity trainer.
Yes. Yeah.
and I mean, did I tell you I ran into him at Dan Tana's restaurant the weekend of the Santa Anita Derby? And I said, wow, I always hope to meet you. And I said, I saw you wearing a blue blazer last year at the Santa Anita Derby. And he said, yeah. I said, that was a beautiful jacket. I always wondered, you know, where I could get one.
Yeah.
And he said, well, I have two of them, he says, and I shop at Bijan. And I said, oh, well, Bijan is right on Rodeo Drive.
Oh, gosh.
And it's where world leaders and giants shop, you know, and so I went and looked it up.
Uh-huh.
The blazer, they were $25,000 each for the blazers. And and he said so cavalierly, well, yeah, I have two of them. Of course you do.
$25,000 for a blazer?
Yeah. And the cute thing is, he's like, hey, let me show you where my bobblehead is. Because up in the rafters at Dantana's, they have a Bob Baffert bobblehead. And he was so excited to show me that he was memorialized in Dantana's with his bobblehead.
Some people's children.
Yeah.
That's funny. Thank you. That was the best laugh I've had in a long time since you were on last week.
Do you think Bryson was cheating or not? What's the consensus this morning?
I think Bryson did something that he knew he shouldn't do. I mean, you don't, mess with the turf. You got to take the shot as it lies there. It may not be pretty, but that's not the point. And all this arguing, I don't know what he was saying to the, the guys in charge of making sure that we don't cheat in this very important game. But it just seemed like he was arguing over it, and then he said, I'm not going to play on Saturday. And then, of course, he's playing on Saturday. But it was like it was very childish. And that bothered me, that he wasn't taking responsibility. That bothered me a lot. So there you have it.
I don't know. Yeah? I don't know, because if you have all that money, what do you need to cheat for? So, and you know everybody's watching.
Yes.
And so there's that. But I do know, that once you get labeled with that, it's hard to shake. And so if he felt he was innocent, maybe I see why he might protest so much, because you know the names. We don't have to say the names. There are people who have been accused of that, and they never have recovered from it.
That's correct, and that's a shame. But Bryson DeChambeau. Hello, you're in the top of the golf mecca. Speaking of meccas, I don't understand why he would do that. Why he would damp down the grass around the ball? Oh yeah, I do, because that makes it easier. But God, it's the Open on top of everything else. And then to argue with the guys, the referees.
That grass is hard to walk in. I mean, how are you supposed to walk in it if you want to go behind the ball and look at the line without stepping on it? I mean, there's that.
Okay.
Ben Wright used to say that. Ben Wright said that even like Gary Player, Mark O'Meara, that they are so competitive they can't help themselves sometimes to try to get a little bit of an edge.
There you go. They can't help themselves. I like that. That's really good insight. As always, you bring it. You made me laugh today. You made me sober. Gosh, you're so good. I appreciate you so much.
It's an honor. It's an honor.
And I have to thank the people who make this show possible. I wanted to talk to you about playing golf in England, Scotland, and Ireland. Have you done all three?
Do it. That's what I'll say.
Do it. Yes.
All those courses are accessible to you. You can go there and play anytime you want. They're not private. Have a fun time.
Isn't that great? Playing golf in England, Scotland, and Ireland. And that's what we're going to do. I look forward to talking to you more about playing golf in England, Ireland, and Scotland.
Mahalo. Have Rick send me his bets, and I'll make them for him today at Del Mar. Text me.
Okay, we'll do. And I want to thank the Newtown Driving Range, where you can warm up before your round or wind down after work. That's a really good idea. The Newtown Range, operated by Casey Nakama Golf Group. It's good golf, good food, good fun. Aloha Power. Work smarter, faster, and easier with their equipment. Our Honda generators, water pumps, chainsaws, riding and walking mowers, the weed whackers, and a whole lot more. You get yours today. Aloha Power Equipment, open Monday through Saturday at Evile, or in Evile, next to the Costco gas station, and in Waipahu. The Aloha Section PGA. Teach your children to play golf. It's the gift that lasts forever. Somebody says, hey, you want to come with us and go play golf? We're going to go. You go, yes, because I've played for self, health, and friendship. That's right. And for family. go golf. And Claude Russo, Master PGA Teaching Professional at Wailea Golf Academy, Wailea, Maui. Thank you for your mana. May you hit the sweet spot every time. My name is Danielle Tucker, and this is The Golf Club.
You've been listening to the award-winning Golf Club radio show with Danielle Tucker on the Golf Club Network statewide. Tune in next week, and we'll tee it up together only on The Golf Club.
Copyright 2026.